Welcome to Returning Home. I'm your host, Natalie Sapinski. Today we have with us a new Ola Chadasha. Her name is Ina, and she is, I think, here a year. And she's a very interesting story. She's not American. She's not a native English speaker. She was born in Romania and as an adult lived in Switzerland and met her husband there and went through a very interesting story with me. She and her husband, they did not know of their Jewish background, of their Jewish origins. There were hints, but they weren't 100% sure. And they both discovered they were both Jewish and made Aliyah together just a year ago in April with three children, ages 1, 9, and 14, three boys. And she is 42 years old and has, you know, come here, like so many of us, to start a new life in the Jewish land, Jewish heartland, Jewish homeland, the Jewish country, the only one. And I'm going to let her tell her story. It's really fascinating. I only got a little bit of it because I wanted her to save it for the show. But just keep in mind, she is not a native English speaker. And how good her English is really remarkable. And now she has to learn Hebrew. So, Ora, welcome.
Hi. Hi, everybody. Nice to be here. Thank
I called you Ora.
Yes.
I called you Ora, but I think your name is actually Ina.
It's Ina Ora. Both are fine.
Ina Ora. Beautiful.
I usually use my Ina name because I think my Hebrew is not so good. So if I present myself as Ora, I'm thinking that people will assume I speak Hebrew, which I kind of learn, but I'm not so fluent in. So that's why. But it's my name. So yeah, I am Ora as well. So yeah, I grew up in Romania. So Romanian is my mother tongue, actually. And I do speak Spanish, but just because when I got married to my husband or when we got to know each other, his family didn't speak any English or other languages but Catalan and Spanish. So in order to communicate with them, I sort of had to learn Spanish. So I did that. Yeah. And
great.
It's very enriching. New language, it adds a layer of culture and understanding the world in a different way. So yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah. You have to have a certain talent for that, or, you know, some people really cannot overcome the language barrier, they call it, just one other language. You've had to learn, I think, three.
Yeah, I actually speak seven languages. So it's, I think the more you learn, the easier it gets. It doesn't really relate to age if you are motivated, but I think it's really, really useful. So if any of you listeners speak more languages, then please do teach your kids, because even if it seems like they are struggling in the beginning, it's really amazing for their brain development. I'm a psychologist and I know this stuff, okay? So I realized that at the beginning with our firstborn, he was not developing his language so quickly, but I didn't know that at the time. That's just normal because he was the firstborn, so adults tend to speak a bit less than the kids, and he would spend most of the days with me. My husband would be working, so I do speak, but I'm kind of a quiet person, so it was maybe also difficult for him to just jump into, because we were speaking three languages. So I was saying everything in Romanian, then my husband would talk to him in Catalan, and all together we use French as our home language. So he would understand, but he would not really reply much in words, okay? And we started to be worried that this is not normal and we should be doing something. So my husband decided he will stop speaking Catalan, which he did. So then none of the other kids benefited him speaking Catalan to them. And I kind of thought, for me, it's the language that I can express myself the best in, so I would stick to it, which I did for a while. And I still
stick to what? Romanian.
Yeah. So I still speak Romanian to the kids, but the older boys, they speak way better French. So then they prefer that. And they do understand Romanian, but they will sometimes just reply in French.
Wow.
But the baby doesn't reply yet, so I can stick to my Romanian, no problem. That's fine. So it's
That's
funny.
Amazing. Did you say you speak seven languages?
Yes, I did say that. I do speak seven languages. The kids kind of speak four or five-ish already.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. All of you listeners who complain about learning Hebrew and how it's so hard and you'll never get to do it, you'll never succeed. Listen to this woman.
It's a skill that it's giving the brain plasticity and enabling you to use more of your brain capacity. So for it's the same for the kids. Once they are used to listening in several languages, then they just can learn quicker Hebrew as well. We are here almost a year now, and my oldest son, he was able to sit for the exams for high school, so for the yeshiva for next year in all in Hebrews. He did the Gemara exam and also the interview in Hebrew, and he got into the best school we have in the region. So I'm really, really proud of him. And he was not all his life in a Jewish school, as many Americans kids they have the privilege. So he didn't. So I'm thinking he did great.
That's really remarkable. All right, so tell us about your Aliyah story. Why did you come here? And that's going to take you back a little bit, but I'll let you tell it. Why did you end up in Israel? Neither of you are Israeli, neither of you have family here, I don't think.
No, that's
So
correct.
yeah,
Okay,
what
so the story goes that I didn't know I was Jewish, and my husband didn't know he was Jewish growing up. And it took me half of my lifetime to get there, to just discover this. Okay, so when I was studying in France, I was doing a master in psychology. I met my husband to be, and he was studying medicine there. And we became friends, and we spent a lot of time together just talking about things in life. And by the time we got to know each other, he started to explain to me the story of his grandparents and how he discovered when he was in high school that he is Jewish, because one of his teachers said, "Oh, but you are a Marano." And he was like, "A Marano, what does that mean? I don't know this word. Like, what does it mean?" And then he looked into it. And he discovered that that's the name for the Jews who were hiding in Spain, and the family name, so his family name from his mother's side is Nissa. This is a Jewish name of origin, and it's for exactly for the Portuguese Jews that were hiding, and then they came to Spain. And so he just looked into it and started reading because he had no idea about what it means to be Jewish. And he realized that some of the habits of his grandparents were those of hiding Jews. Like they would light up candles for Shabbat on Friday evening, but the grandparents would just hide in their room to do that without any of the grandkids. And they would make believe that they are cleaning up the house on Saturday. So that means they would open all the windows of the house, even in winter when it was freezing cold, because heating system in Barcelona was not really brilliant, and it's still not because they're not used to having such a cold winters. But yeah, so they would just open all the windows. They wouldn't do the cleaning actually, but the neighbors would think that they are, right? So they were just hiding. And
So
so he
explain that to
invested.
me. Explain that to me, what you're saying. On Shabbat, are you talking about
Yes. So
Shabbat?
in Spain, because being a Jew is not something you want to show, or not a few years back anyway. So his grandparents never let know any of their kids that they are Jewish, but they would do these things to fit in. So that means everybody in Spain would clean up the house on Saturday because that's the day you do that, and then you have Sunday to go to church and just to relax. So they wouldn't want to do the cleaning actually on Saturday, but they would just open all the windows of the house as you would do when you really heavy clean the whole house, so that the neighbors would think that they too are cleaning as everybody else.
Right. But what
Okay.
were they doing?
I don't know. They were
Okay.
just doing other
Relaxing,
stuff.
maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, reading,
They were
whatever.
not really, they were not keeping Shabbat as properly because nobody knew that they were Jewish, not their kids, not the grandkids.
Right. But they were not cleaning the house.
They were not cleaning, they were just making the neighbors believe they are doing that.
Right.
And so my husband figured that out later on, that okay, so they must be Jews and they were hiding. But at this time his grandfather was already deceased, and then his grandmother, She would never talk about if they were Jewish or not. And afterwards, when we met and then we got together, and then I went to visit his family in Barcelona, and I got to meet the grandmother. Just at the end of her life, she was not really completely lucid. So sometimes she would know who we are, sometimes she wouldn't. But one day my husband just asked her, "Grandma, are we Jewish?" And then a huge, beautiful smile on her face. And she said, "Yes, we are all Jewish." And a while back afterwards, my husband thought that, this didn't really happen in real life. It's something that he imagined. And then I had to say, no, it really happened. I was there. I heard, I saw her. So she really said that, like she really admitted. Okay. And so when he was explaining these kinds of stories to me, it made me think of things my grandparents would do as I was a kid. And I remember that my mother was always remembering these things from her childhood, that they lived close to the synagogue in the city. And she would always have this kiddush wine, like sweet wine, amazing caramel wine. And she loved it as a kid. But that's it. Like she would just say that as something, people just do that. Sometimes they have this wine at home and.
Right.
Okay. And at the time she was telling me these things, I had no idea what it meant because I didn't know much about being Jewish or who they were or that we might be Jews. So
Okay, so
kind
let
of
me just
sad.
ask you a question. This is both for you and your husband. I don't know if you know the answers, but in a society, people do celebrate certain days. And when there's big festivals, Christmas, Easter, I guess those are the Christian holidays, is where you lived. What did you do during those times?
Well, we celebrated like everybody else because my mom, she was not brought up as a Jew. She didn't know she's Jewish either. So for her, this is what everybody else did. So that's what we did.
Right.
But I grew up in Romania. At the time, it was a communism period. So that meant nobody really celebrated any religious thing. And going to church was not something that you would do because you were kind of not allowed to. So it's kind of,
Right.
yeah, it was Christmas and everything, but that didn't mean much. It just meant, I didn't even know that for Christians, Christmas is when it's related to Jesus and stuff. Like, I just thought, okay, it's when you get presents
Right.
and you make
Right.
cookies and you get to have oranges in the house. And
Uh-huh.
so it's more like a social happening.
Right. Right. Okay.
And my husband, I know his grandparents really resented church, so none of that. So he didn't really get presents for any of the holidays.
So no religion. It
So,
was really like no religion.
yeah. Yes.
Interesting. All right. So you
And
met
so,
you. Go
yeah.
ahead. Go ahead.
So we met, and then when we had our first boy, we were thinking, what do we leave behind us and what do we want to teach our son? And related to God, what do we do? And then it really resonated with us being Jewish and what it meant. So I started also to learn more about it because, as I said, I had really no idea. I was quite ignorant on in this domain. And with the help of my husband, who started to learn way before me and he knew much more, I felt the connection and that this is something that it could be good for my family, for my kids. So I wanted them to also know that they are Jewish and to learn to live a Jewish life. So we started celebrating Shabbat on our own in kind of like at the beginning, dropping the phones, like putting them aside or trying not to switch the lights. It was difficult at the beginning, of course, it took us a while. But then we also thought about, okay, we are teaching Kai that he is Jewish, but then we have nothing to prove it. So in a few years, what will he say? Like, okay, people maybe will say that he is not because we have no documents proving it. So to make it a story short, we decided to go all the way. And so we contacted the rabbi and the at the community in Bern. We were living in the Swiss capital at the time. It's a small community, and they just got a new rabbi from Norway at the time. And he's young, and he was very into helping people out and building a community. So he was really interested in our story, and he started to say he could help us out with the Gewur process and with learning. So we were studying with him, and in a few years we could actually make this happen. And we passed the exam. We have been in front of the Beit Din, and we could officially become Jewish.
Interesting. So, how long did that take you?
2 or 3 years, yeah, between 2 and 3,
And
yeah.
did he ever at any point try to dissuade you, try to say, no, this isn't for you?
The rabbi, no.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, and he also, his mother converted. So he knew how it is when you really want to become Jewish, when you really feel this is what you are, this is where you need to be. So he's a very supportive and amazing rabbi. So that was a good help from his part.
Yeah. I heard
The,
that some
yeah.
rabbis turn, they're supposed to refuse
No, I
you.
know that's the job of the Beit Din, so you need to go meet with them a few times, and they try to tell you it's not easy. Yeah, so they did that, but not the rabbi that we were learning with. Like, he was
Interesting.
really just doing the supportive part of the job.
All right. So you had the one boy, then you had the three. I mean, you had more kids. You stayed there.
Yeah, so yeah, we stayed in Switzerland. We've been there like for 16 years. Because let's face it, like, Switzerland is a good place to be in a way. Like, you get to have a good salary, a quiet life. It's kind of a safe place. In Bern, we had a Jewish community. So then we had Oren. It's a 5 years difference between them, but that's just how it happened. And so then we started to send Kai to Reli, so to learn Hebrew at the synagogue, but it was just once a week, 1 hour. It's really nothing. So then we had to do more at home with him. And in a few years, like when he was 10, we decided to go a year in Australia for a professional outcome for my husband. As he's a doctor, he wanted to do a fellowship and to get more specialized in his field. And I thought it's an amazing place to be, and it's for a vacation, you need more weeks, not just the 2 regular vacation times. So if we can go spend a year there, he would do his work, we will be kind of on vacation with the kids, I was thinking. That would be amazing. So we did that, and we thought the kids could learn English, which they did during that year, which is really helpful when we got to Israel. Living in Efrat, it's a place where you have many English speakers. So for the kids, it was kind of very helpful at the beginning to be able to communicate with everybody in English. But what it also meant, it was that we could live in a big Jewish community. Like in Melbourne, they have a 50,000 people community and a huge A roof and many synagogues and many Jewish schools. So
Okay,
we could
so
send them to a
let
Jewish
me just
school.
jump in a
Yeah.
second, because I didn't even ask you the size of the Jewish community in Bern, where you were in Switzerland.
Let's say 2,000 people.
Okay, yeah, that is tiny.
But not many observant families. So even there, we felt like the outsiders because we wanted to keep Shabbat. So we walked 4 kilometers to go to the synagogue every
What?
Shabbat. And
Whoa.
people were saying, "But are you crazy? Like, Oren
Yeah.
is only 3 years old. Why,
Yeah.
how you make him walk so long
Oh, God.
distances, you know?" And then you have to
Yeah.
go back home. And
Yeah. It's strange. Yeah. It's odd.
Then they would say, "Do you want to come over for Shabbat? But you know, we don't really eat kosher." But you know,
Right.
like,
Right.
okay, oh, okay, thank you. It's beautiful. Yeah,
Yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we all at this time when we decided to go to Australia, we already had in mind that we wanted to make Aliyah at some point. But first, we wanted to go to Australia to see how it is to do this fellowship, and so then we finally had the possibility to have our kids in a proper Jewish school. And it was just amazing how it worked out for them, like how it made them feel like finally they are part of something bigger and
Oh
they
yeah.
belong. So
Yeah.
they were just happy and shiny and having so many friends and playing and no more the need of asking, oh, this is kosher. Can I eat this? Can I eat at his house or my friend's house? Or, it was just, yeah, everything is kosher. You can eat. It's fine. Don't need to ask for it. Everybody here, it's more or less observing in the same way. So they really, really were thriving. And so then we had to, this was, by the way, in 2020. So when Corona time was flourishing everywhere in the world. So it was not easy at the beginning because Melbourne was one of the most restrictive places in the world. And so that was a bit complicated. And which also, thank God, made things easier for us to move away from there, come back to Europe and to make Aliyah. Because life in Australia is like in paradise. It's really amazing. And the kids loved it. So they were not sure that they wanted to quit and to come back. And then we were saying, yeah, but we'll make Aliyah, we'll go live in Israel. And then in Israel, everybody, it's kosher more or less. The schools, you don't need to pay for them. They are all Jewish, so you get a good education. And, you can have a nice Shabbat with everybody. But they loved it there, so it was very difficult for them. So that was kind of complicated to convince them that, I mean, the oldest one who was 11 when we came back from Australia.
When you say came
And
back, you mean you went back to Switzerland?
yeah, we came
Sure, they
back.
didn't want to leave. They were like going back to the dark ages.
Yeah, of course. And he had so many good friends in Australia and having so much fun and sleepovers, and like it was amazing. I know, I understood him. And I was just thinking, we're so far away from our families, and with COVID, it's not sure that we can travel whenever we might need to or we would like to. And we didn't know how long it would take. So that's what made the decision to quit Australia and come back to Europe a bit easier
Also,
than
wasn't
what.
the Australia thing a 1 year fellowship?
It was a 1 year fellowship, but we could have stayed longer if you wanted.
Right.
My husband was okay at the hospital. He could have
Right.
continued
That's
working.
right. You're
I,
right.
in the
You're right.
meantime, I found a job I was working too. So my vacation time transformed into real life really
Yeah,
quickly.
sure.
So then one of the schools wanted to hire me as a psychologist. So yeah, it was, the things were going great. So, it
Did
was
you stay
difficult.
there that entire year? Did you travel at all outside the country? Did you go back to
We went to Tasmania, which is still Australia, but an island. So,
No, that's not what I mean. Did you visit your family in Switzerland then?
no, absolutely not. Our families, my family is still in Romania. My husband's, it's still in Spain. So we didn't see anybody for a whole year. And
And
that's why, yeah.
how often by living when you were in Australia, sorry, when you were living in Switzerland, how often did you see your families?
That was easy because my parents would come like at least twice a year. I would go in the summer with the kids for 2 or 3 weeks, depending on how I could manage. So at least we would meet 3 or 4 times a year. And then my mother-in-law, she would also come, and we would go to Spain as well once a year. So
A
overall,
lot.
we would see family quite a lot. Yeah, so that was
So you were going to
easy.
the other end. You basically went to the other end of the world.
Yeah, we did. And it was amazing. So if
So that was a
anybody
one
wants to go on
year.
vacation, it's
Okay,
really nice.
go to
Yeah.
Australia. Go to Melbourne.
Yeah. No,
But
go
so
to
you
Sydney. It's better if
okay.
it's on vacation.
Okay. So you went
Yeah.
back. You went back to
Yeah.
Bern and you did
So
what?
we went back to Bern because that's where we had our apartment, and my husband went to his job back, and all of a sudden we had to take the kids back to a regular school, and it was not good.
Right.
Though Hashem, it was not good because we realized we can't take them to that school anymore. So that meant another huge sacrifice because my husband kept working in Bern, but I took the kids and moved to Geneva, which is French speaking, and they have a Jewish school. But it's a 2 hours train ride away, or car, or whatever you want. It takes 2 hours to get from Bern to Geneva. So that meant that my husband would during the week stay work in Geneva in Bern, and I would be living with the kids in Geneva so that they can go to the Jewish school, and then we would meet for Shabbat or something like that. So for 1 year, so that we can prepare the papers to make Aliyah. So we did that,
Good.
and
Good. It moved everything along. Yeah.
while we were waiting with the Aliyah process, we got to have another baby, which meant we decided to stay until after he was born before making Aliyah. So we got the papers to make Aliyah. We got approved when I was still pregnant, but it was quite at the end of my pregnancy, so moving was not so easy. And they said from the Jewish agency, "Don't worry, it's fine. You can make Aliyah afterwards. It's all taken care of." But then it turns out after the baby was born, it was even more complicated because now the baby needed to be approved to make Aliyah as if he was not part of the same family who got approved. So it was a complicated process all over again.
Just for the baby?
Yeah, just
That's
for the baby.
ridiculous.
Yes,
Oh.
I know, I know.
So everyone listening, if you're pregnant, make Aliyah when you're pregnant. Easier.
Yeah, yes,
Easier.
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I did that.
exactly.
I made Aliyah pregnant with two kids
Good,
and
good
a
for you.
7 months pregnant, and yeah.
Yeah, good.
Okay. And you can fly at 7 months. I don't think you can fly after that.
No, exactly. I could have flown, but I was thinking it's too difficult to just pack up everything and leave. So, and I knew the Swiss system to giving birth, and I was comfortable with the hospital system and
Okay,
everything. So,
look, it's okay.
yeah, it's okay.
Either side you have your pros and your cons, There's always positive and negative.
Yes, of course.
Okay. So you landed Israel and you chose Efrat. How did you choose Efrat?
So that's easy and beautiful. Before making Aliyah, with these kids who wanted to go back to Australia, we said we will make a pilot trip. We'll go to Israel and visit a few places. It will be vacation, but also with the eyes of somebody who wants to live here or there, and you need to really be mindful of everything and see how it feels every place. So that's what we told the kids. And then we came just the summer before making Aliyah. And so we had friends in Efrat, a family, amazing family that we met actually while we were staying in Australia. They were also doing a fellowship in Australia and lived in Melbourne. So we became friends because during COVID and restrictions, only the Israelis would dare to meet with other people. So they came to see us when we got there, which was very nice. And so when they
Okay,
moved
hang on a
back.
minute, because I love it. Only the Israelis would dare to
Yeah.
meet with other people. Now, it's funny because
Yes.
I live here. I was in Israel during Corona. Some Israelis were very fearful, okay? Some. But yeah, you're
Yeah.
right. Most of them, like they are with life, Israelis do not like to keep to rules, as you know.
Yeah, right.
So that's just so funny to hear.
But Australians, it's like they are like Germans. They need to follow the rules. If you're not allowed outside, you are not allowed outside to meet and whatever. So they would stick to that. And all these Israeli families that knew that we came, like a few of them, they had doctors in the families doing fellowships. So they said, "Okay, so let's meet. Come to our place, or we'll
Great,
come to your
great.
place." And
I
then,
love it.
you know,
I
so
love
then
it.
we didn't felt so lonely at the beginning. So it was great. And our friends from Efrat, so it was one of these families. It was very beautiful, and so we overlapped there for 3 months, I think, or 4 months, and then they came back to Israel, and they had a house in Efrat, so they moved into their new house in Efrat, and so we came to visit them. We
Nice.
have seen a few places. Netanya was recommended because we speak French, so it's a huge French-speaking community in Netanya, but we didn't like the weather. And I was not so keen on being surrounded by French speakers because I think I would be more motivated to learn Hebrew if people don't speak French around me. And also for the kids, like if they can just speak French, why would they do the effort to learn Hebrew?
Hebrew,
I thought,
right.
right?
Okay.
So
And
as
did you
it
really
turns
feel
out,
that? But did you really feel
yeah.
that when you're in Netanya?
No, I only met a family and it was brief and it was not even Shabbat, so I can't say I met really like the community.
I just want everyone listening. What Ina did was pretty smart. These pilot trips. I'm glad you did that and that they're happening again. But yeah, you really don't get a feel for a place. Exactly. You meet one family. What does that say? You know, what does that
Yeah,
really
nothing.
say?
No.
So go on.
So then we came to Efrat for Shabbat and it was Tisha B'Av, so we stayed for Tisha B'Av and Shabbat. They were just one after the other. And my kids were just amazed at what it means to have Shabbat in Efrat, in our shchuna. Like, kids could just go freely on the street, play with their neighbors, with their friends, go to this house and go to that house, and everybody comes over and they just knock on the door and you open and
Right,
the kids
right.
can
So
play.
all
This
of you
doesn't happen.
listening, So Ina just said shukhuna. Shukhuna is a neighborhood. And what she's describing is just like a yeshuv life. Probably actually it's not even true. It's probably this like this in the cities also. It's just very safe here.
Yes.
It's true. It's like the old my parents used to say it's like the 1950s. You know, it's true. Everyone's home is open. Everyone is trusting. You know your neighbors. You know, you know each other. So you're right. You just go knock on a door. You are play the kids play in the street. They're everyone's out and about and friendly and safe, and you know each other. You know what I mean? And yeah, it's like heaven. I mean, that's how it's supposed to
So
be.
yeah, they loved it. In Switzerland, you need to make a play date 2 weeks in advance, and you can't just go to people's houses. And my kids couldn't just go out in the park alone. I always had to go with them.
Right.
So here it's like, Mom, I'm going out. Okay. And then just checking in from time to time, my son comes back to say, hey, I'm still going to be out for an hour or so. Okay, fine.
Wow,
Or
and
I'm
that
going
probably
there, I'm
doesn't
going
happen
there.
anymore. For sure, that doesn't happen anymore.
Not so
Right,
much, no.
right,
So
right.
anyways, and they, after we've seen a few places, my eldest son, who was the most keen on going back to Australia, said, okay, I can agree on making Aliyah on the condition we live in Efrat.
Cute. Okay.
I like that. But
Wow.
then a few days after we went back to Switzerland, he says, Mom, you know, as I said, Efrat, but you know, actually, it needs to be this Tamar Shkuna, like the my
This
friend's,
neighborhood,
because
this
this is where I
specific
want to be.
hilltop. Right.
Okay. So I was like, okay, well, I hope we can find an apartment or house there, but I'm not sure. We'll have to see. But anyways, Efrat is the whole Efrat could be a good place, you know.
Right.
And then he comes back to say, and I was thinking it needs to be on our friend's street, you know, like that's it. It has to be on the, come on, seriously? But then I was thinking, okay, he really learned that I was saying to him, when you want something to happen, you make an objective and it has to be really specific and really clear how you make it. So he did that. He said where exactly, very specific. And so we were supposed to come during the summer, but we just decided we need to come as soon as we can. And that's how we came in April. But what I want to say is that we discussed with my husband Motzei Shabbat, okay, we can't wait until the summer. We need to go. And Sunday morning, I get a friend from a message from my friend in Efrat saying, hey, Ina, do you still want to come to Tamar? We found an apartment for you guys. It's free. So I like, okay. I told to Kai, my son, okay, you got what you wanted. An apartment in the Tamar on the street of our friends.
Wow. Great. Great.
Yep.
So all those of you listening, the Tamar neighborhood in Efrat is on, it's a new neighborhood. I say new, maybe 5 years old, maybe a
Yeah.
little older.
No, five-ish. Yeah.
Yeah, really beautiful, up high up on a
Mostly
hilltop.
Israeli.
Yeah, all Israeli. New, not just apartments. So they're built like almost like townhouses in a little bit, you know, one on top of another. It's so cool. You're up there. It's almost like you're on the moon. It's new. And I haven't been there in maybe 2 years, but when I was there, like there weren't even trees yet. And they were just putting in a court for the school. It's so well planned and it's so big. And there's so many houses and so many families. And you think to yourself, wow, you know, who's going to live here? And I bet there's no place available anymore. It is so popular. Efrat is so hot. You know, everybody wants to live there. Gush Etzion in general, very, very popular, not just with foreigners, with Israelis too. It is a very beautiful life. And you hear every language there, okay? you don't just hear English and Hebrew. You probably hear everything. But the English speakers are very comfortable because all their neighbors and friends have already moved there, so they move there too. That's what happens. You move where you have friends.
Yep, it's amazing. It's a very nice place to be.
Yeah, it's really great. We have some rescuers there. We have a woman who lives up there, actually in the Tamar neighborhood. She was the first rescuer up there. And I'll just tell everyone listening, she was a Hatzalah, United Hatzalah rescuer. And she was so concerned that there was no ambulance up there that she wanted to be an ambulance driver. And she came to us, and or I believe she came to us, or she came to Magen David Adom. But because she had only taken the United Hatzalah, it wasn't high enough of a standard, so she actually had to take the whole entire medic course again with us, and she got the ambulance. So there is a ambulance up there on the hill tomorrow. It's a woman who drives it, and she's a bunch of little kids. Some of these people are just unbelievable. I mean, real heroes. Talk about specific, wanting to commit to an objective and complete the objective. That's pretty dedicated. That's a lot of hours.
Yes.
That's 220 hours. Look,
Yes.
we're running out of time. We have 2 minutes left. Tell me what you're up to today.
What I'm up to today, I'm still learning Hebrew. I will start a job in a few weeks for an American company in Beit Shemesh as a talent acquisition position. So I will be posting jobs, and I'm trying to start my coaching business as a psychologist and NLP life coach. I love doing coaching and helping women and kids develop and find inner resources. So that's my passion in life.
Yofi, Yofi. How about your husband?
He's a doctor. He would love to join you on your podcast to just explain how it works for doctors who come from other places other than American.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
We'll get him
so
on.
because he has a
Great.
lot of good tips right now, it's been
Great.
very difficult. So
Wow.
he, that would be awesome,
Okay.
interesting.
Okay. Is he working? Did he find a position?
And now he's doing Istakhlut, so he needs to be doing this observership at the hospital, so just to learn the system, but he needs to be doing this for 6 months. That's what they are asking from him because he comes from Switzerland. So it's a bit crazy because he knows more stuff than the doctors who are supposed to be supervising him, but
Wow, they probably don't
that's
like
it.
that. Oh, they don't like that. And your children, they're you have a teenager now. He's going to yeshiva. You told us at the beginning that he interviewed and got into a great yeshiva. That's very impressive. Mazal tov. And you have what, an
Tada.
8th grader and a baby, something like that.
Yeah, so Kita Gimel, 3rd grade, and then the baby who's 1, and he's going to a mishpachton so that I can start working.
Amazing. All right. So we are less than 1 minute. I want to thank you for coming on the show. Any of you have questions for Ina, please contact me at natalie@israelnewstalkradio.com, and I'll be sure to forward your message along. It's been really eye-opening to hear this story, and I want to thank you for coming, Ina. Thank you so
Thank
much.
you, Natalie.
Yeah,
Thank
best of
you.
luck. Best of luck.